The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents... Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is Tuesday, April 6, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. And joining me here in the studio, the maestro himself, Ganja John.
Hey everybody, how you doing today?
Got to get the right mic turned on there for you, John.
Yeah, you know, our audience here is a little late on their cues too.
I know, what's up with that?
Yeah, I know.
And joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, my good friend and half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Hey Russ, hey Ganja John. How's it going today? I see Ganja John still has that cool hat on.
Yeah, and I see that you found your way away from the studio. You managed to escape from under the table. We're so proud of you.
Yeah, I finally found your door. You have a very confusing house, Russ. You should have exit signs.
Exit signs.
It's a dungeon, baby.
That's right. Well, Carrie brings us our news right after the first break from CannabisFantastic.com. What's in the headlines today?
Well, today we're actually covering three different stories about medical marijuana issues. We're going to look at some programs in Michigan, a hopeful program in Maryland, and then we're going to talk about testing cannabis in California.
All right. We'll check all that out right after our first break, so stay tuned for that. Also, I want to give you a couple of heads up on some things that we posted out on our blog. Excuse me, out at our blog at stash.normal.org. Great news coming from the United States territories of Guam and Saipan. Saipan's in the Northern Mariana Islands. They have a senator there who has put forth a marijuana legalization bill in their Senate in Saipan. And there's a senator in Guam now who's looking to do the same thing. Now, if these U.S. territories were to legalize marijuana in any way, we could travel there without a passport. That's one of the really cool things about these U.S. territories. We've also got a chapter in the United States Virgin Islands trying to do the same thing. Also want to point out we've got a new medical marijuana map updated for April of 2010 up at stash.normal.org. You can learn all about what's happening in the latest in medical marijuana, decriminalization, legalization, initiatives, per se DUID laws, hemp laws, where there's dispensaries, which states will take different medical marijuana cards from out of state. You can check all of that out on our map. It's up at stash.normal.org, where I've also posted some very disturbing stories about our Second Amendment rights as medical marijuana patients. We've, of course, been following the story of Steve Sarich up there in Washington State, who has been denied the chance to purchase more guns because supposedly he's a drug abuser for being a medical marijuana patient. This also parallels the case of Stephen Schwert in Oregon, a medical marijuana patient who was denied a concealed handguns permit. That's currently wending its way through the Oregon Court of Appeals. And in California, Northern California Normal, Army Specialist Sean Merritt, who's the head of the new Northern California Normal, recently made the papers in Redding, California for his protest of not being able to purchase a gun from the local gun shop And it just so happens the owner of the gun shop is the mayor of the town. And, of course, that mayor is saying, I can't sell you any firearms because it's a federal thing. We do the federal background check. Since you're a medical marijuana patient, you're obviously a drug abuser, and guns can't be sold to drug users under federal law. It's a very complex topic. We'll get into more depth on that on a future episode of Normal Show Live. But it's just something I'd like people to take a look at out at the blog. I often have to talk to conservative folks that have trouble getting their mind around the idea of marijuana legalization, and I always remind them that the war on drugs is one of the most effective ways of our federal government of disarming the population and spying on the population, so it's something all conservatives should definitely get behind. All right, now coming up on Normal Show Live today, it is our Daily Toker Tunes. We will be having Electric Tuesday with Sara. She'll be bringing us a song from Tan Graham. And then California Marijuana Report at the bottom of the hour, interview with San Francisco District 8 candidate Starchild. And then at the end of the show, the end of my top five rant against
You're
the
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 14 states today, and THCF has clinics in 10 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Michigan, New Mexico, and Rhode Island. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or call 1-800-723-0188.
Do you want to legalize it? Call your congressman today. 202-224-3121. It's free, it's easy, and you don't even have to give your name. Just your zip code, and they'll hook you up to your congressman. Call 202-224-3121 and tell Congress you support marijuana legalization.
Like I was trying to say earlier, the continuation of my rant against the DEA's top 10 reasons not to legalize marijuana coming up at the end of the show. Coming up right now, your normal news with Cannabis Carry.
That's what you got to do.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
A proposal for a medicinal marijuana bill in the state of Maryland has gotten a late session push from the Senate committee that has let the bill languish for months and led some activists to declare it dead. Yesterday, the Senate Judicial Proceedings Committee signed off on a medical marijuana bill that Senator Jamie Raskin, a Democrat from Montgomery, co-sponsored that would establish control over medical cannabis use in the state. Maryland's legislature passed a medical marijuana affirmative defense law in 2003. That law requires the courts to consider a defendant's use of medical marijuana to be a mitigating factor in marijuana-related state prosecutions. The current bill, Senate Bill 627, was approved after an hour of discussion on the bill's amendments. The sticking point was an amendment that would allow landlords or condo associations to ban the use of medical marijuana, a point that was ultimately approved. Karen Woodson, Government Affairs Director with Americans for Safe Access, says that the bill falls short of meeting the fundamental needs of patients. They had been working with the bill's sponsors seeking amendments to make cannabis more accessible for patients. Just like New Jersey, the last state to pass a medical marijuana law, the Maryland bill prohibits patients from cultivating the plant. It also restricts patients to 6 ounces obtained from a licensed caregiver or distributor in a 30-day period. One of the victories of advocates that changed it from the original 2-ounce limit in a 30-day period. The legislation proposes that the Maryland Department of Health and Mental Hygiene administer the state's medical marijuana program, including the licensing of patients, caregivers, large-scale growers, and distributors. Another hitch in getting the bill passed this year is the estimated cost of getting the program off the ground. In a year full of budget gaps, analysts believe that it would take about $400,000 to implement the program. Legislative analysts project it would cost $40 for a patient to be licensed as a medical marijuana user and $400 for a pharmacy to become a licensed distributor. Senator Alex Mooney tried to double the fees, but that move failed. The push to get the bill through this legislative session, now that the bill can go to a full Senate vote, must be done in the next 2 weeks. If they don't vote on it, the bill goes back to be reworked for next year's session.
Well, this is one of those good news, bad news sort of situations, isn't it? The good news is that they're looking at a medical marijuana bill to improve what they have currently in Maryland, which is the affirmative defense. Which, the affirmative defense, for those of you that don't know what it is, what it means is, if the cops catch you with weed, they bust you, and they take you in for fingerprints and booking, and usually put you in a cell, and you got to call someone and make bail. And then after you've made bail, you'll be given a summons. You'll have to go to court at a certain time for your crime to answer to the charges. And once you go to court, then, after you've hired an attorney to get to court, then you can tell the judge, but judge, I had to use it for medical purposes. And at that point, after you've gone through all of that, then the judge might decide that you were using it for medical purposes, and you're subject only to a $100 fine, right? So after you've bailed out, after you've been arrested, after you've gone and got yourself an attorney, after all of that, then maybe, perhaps, you have a defense against these charges. So to have a medical marijuana law would be an improvement over that. However, some of these things in the medical marijuana law, the idea that landlords or tenant associations or homeowners associations should be able to ban whether or not someone can use medical marijuana, do we give landlords that privilege to ban whether people use Prozac, to ban whether people use OxyContin, to ban whether people drink in their own homes? This is insane. We always get marijuana laws when we have these medical marijuana states that are so much more restrictive over medical use of cannabis than they are the medical use of any other sort of drug, and even including prescription drugs that are far, far more dangerous and addictive than cannabis could ever be considered. So to me, this is almost a deal breaker to me to be able to say that landlords can ban this, because who are the people that have landlords? The poor, the disabled, the people on fixed incomes. Those are the ones that have landlords. Rich folks that own their own homes, well, not even necessarily rich folks, working class folks, middle class folks, but folks that own their own homes won't have to worry about this. It's the poor and the folks that most will need the medical marijuana that are going to suffer here. And the no home grow provisions, of course, that's always a problem for me in any medical marijuana bill. I believe that if we do not have the right to home grow, we are subject to the whims of corporations and governments that will control cannabis, so we can never give up the right to home grow. Moving up from 2 ounces to 6 ounces, I guess that's a benefit. But the part where they said it had to be distributed through pharmacies, where pharmacies could pay $400 to become distributors, I think that might end up being a sticking point that hurts the distribution here. Pharmacies involve federal controlled substances laws, and according to the federal government, marijuana is Schedule 1 and cannot be distributed, right? Cannot go through pharmacies. So they're going to have to come up with some sort of different wording there, compassion centers, care centers, something. But if you start putting pharmacy in there, I worry that the federal laws are going to join this. But mixed bag there coming out of Maryland, but at least they're moving forward with something.
The Michigan Medical Marijuana Program just celebrated a birthday. It began just 1 year ago on April 4th of 2009. Since then, the Michigan Department of Community Health has been overseeing the program and processing the applications. This past year, they have received and processed 11,835 patient cards and 5,081 caregiver cards, according to the department's website. Almost 3,500 applications have been denied, primarily due to incomplete applications or missing documentation. Currently, the applications are coming in faster than they can be handled. The Michigan Department of Community Health Compliance Section Manager said that the number of applications being received has increased every single month. About 8,000 applications are backlogged and waiting for processing. Last month, they received an average of about 160 applications every day. Celeste Clarkson, the the Michigan Department of Community Health Compliance Section Manager, said her three full-time employees have issued registry identification cards for qualifying applications received through December and are now working their way through the applications they have received since the first of the year. Under Michigan law, applicants must complete a form, have a physician certify them as a qualifying patient, and pay an application fee of $100 or $25 if enrolled in a Medicaid health plan or receiving supplemental security income. Patients or caregivers can possess up to 2.5 ounces of possessed cannabis and 12 plants in an enclosed, locked facility. Although Michigan is receiving medical marijuana applications at an increasing rate, it still does not get as many applicants as Colorado, which is receiving a reported 1,000 applications a day. Colorado has had medical marijuana laws on their books since 1999.
Wow. Amazing how when you give people a chance to be law-abiding citizens that they take it. Yeah, 160 applications per day in Michigan, over 11,000, almost 12,000 patients in their first year of the program. Now, I remember the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. It started out in 1998, and its first year had something like 500, and now it's, you know, increased to about 30,000. And the folks here in Oregon are going, oh my God, it's out of control. There's way too many medical marijuana patients. You said there'd only be 500. So to see 11,800 signing up in Michigan in the first year, that's just amazing to me. But again, like I said, this is people given the chance to be legal, given a chance to jump through some hoops to show the rest of society that they're willing to be responsible about their cannabis use. People do it. Most of the people that use cannabis are law-abiding citizens who go to work, pay their taxes, raise their families. And they don't want to be considered criminals for deciding that they want to smoke a joint at the end of the day instead of drinking a glass of wine. Now, I know we're talking about medical here in Michigan, and that's a different situation where people need the medicine for chronic pain or for nausea or cancer, AIDS, whatever it may be. But it does speak to a larger point, and that larger point is that given the chance to regulate marijuana, people will comply with it. People will go out of their way, spend money at the state, give their name and address to a state government bureaucracy to keep track of where they're at, and submit themselves to regulations for this medicine that are so much more onerous and restrictive than regulations on any other medicine, and yet people will still go through that because they want to be law-abiding citizens. They want to help contribute to society. Michigan, Colorado, all the medical marijuana states are direct proof of that.
An issue becoming apparent in some medical marijuana states is that no person or agency is responsible for certifying the safety and quality of medical marijuana. The Food and Drug Administration has taken no part in authenticating or overseeing cannabis that is sold to patients. In Oakland, California, a laboratory that was originally set up by two former cultivators back in 2008 has carved a niche in the industry and fills the void by offering a form of regulation that can give patients that may be medically fragile some peace of mind. Steep Hill Labs has examined over 12,000 cannabis samples in the last 2 years for approximately 50 medical marijuana dispensaries that have contracted with the company for sample testing. Samples of cannabis that are found infected with toxins which could target the respiratory organs or trigger respiratory infections can be identified in the labs so they don't infect other products. Steep Hill Labs says about 3% of the marijuana it tests has unsafe mold levels under general guidelines for herbal products. 85% show some traces of mold that can develop during growing, drying, or packaging. No state guidelines have been set up to test medical marijuana in California, but the new city ordinance in Los Angeles now requires dispensaries there to test for pesticides or, quote, any other regulated contaminants for food or drugs. Recently, tests on marijuana that undercover police officers bought from a Los Angeles dispensary revealed an insecticide, bifenthrin, that registered 170 times tolerable guidelines set by the Environmental Protection Agency for human food or animal feed. Authorities speculated that the dispensary may have been selling cannabis smuggled across the border or grown illicitly. The other and probably more profitable service that the lab provides is a run-through gas chromatography machine that uses a mass spectrometer that can identify potency. As a result of tests at the lab, Harborside Health Center, a cannabis club that serves 47,000 medical users at dispensaries in Oakland and San Jose, pays the lab so they can list THC levels for each pot strain they provide. Janet Weiss, a toxicologist who works with the Steep Hill Lab, says that this industry should join the rest of the world in what food and drugs are required to do. It shouldn't be a buyer's beware market. Addison DeMora, Steep Hill's lab co-founder, said, quote, "This is a success story of self-regulation. We want people to produce cannabis that they would give to the dearest person that they love."
Oh, that's such great news. Glad to hear these labs are doing the testing that the FDA won't do. It's always quite ironic that they say, oh, marijuana, it might have Aspergillus fungus, it might have pesticides. Well, yeah, we're worried about that too. So how about somebody test this stuff and make sure that it's okay for us to consume? Great work from the labs down there, and Stephen D'Angelo and the folks at Harborside Health Center for providing patients with the information they need to make informed decisions about their use of cannabis medicines. Oh, look at my non-existent watch. It's that time again. Time for us to take a break before we get to our daily toker tunes. So you find a way to relax. We'll be right back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and coworkers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
It's time for your daily toker tunes, the best in 420 friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Electric Tuesday, our segment featuring the best of modern electronic music in the genres of dance, new age, house, and electronica. Brought to you by Sarah Kant Photography. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. We fly through cyberspace all the way to the east coast of America, Boston, Massachusetts, and our Tuesday editor, Sarah Kant. Sarah, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Russ. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Glad to have you back here, and we always look forward to Electric Tuesday, getting us our dance tunes, get our groove on here. So what's happening with your song today?
Sorry, can you repeat that? I'm actually in a car on a cell phone.
I was just wondering what you had on tap today for our song.
All right. Peter Szabolcs is an ambient electronic music producer from Budapest, Hungary. He's been making music since 2004 and has self-released albums since the 2005 founding of the Tangram Project, with the exception of one officially released on Karmatronic Records at home and abroad, and is currently debuting tracks one by one from current album Vermilion as he plays with the synth, new wave, and down-tempo genres. Recording in his own Afterglow studio, Peter receives substantial internet press and internet radio play. He has created music for short films, advertisements, and a Hungarian online game as well. Tangram is becoming known for making family-friendly electronica and associated media, still quite subversively trippy. Aiming to provide a, quote, new and special experience in lounge, ambient, and other electronic music styles, unquote, this is attempted via live audiovisual concert performances with art created by himself with the moniker Elor Nez Visual Group. He also seems to have philosophically chosen to distribute all of his music, except a clinically tested one-hour music to help you sleep well, for free or a voluntary donation. Pandora Connection is off the Highway Ambience album. Ambient with a shoegazer feel, this ethereal piece contains spacey, haunting, funeral vocals and the singer's voice as an instrument rather than a tool for linguistics. Peter has stated that he tries to give a relaxing feel with all of his music, and he has done so here. This is a connection one doesn't have to make behind closed doors. Check out Tangram on his website at tangram-music.com, SoundCloud, Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, YouTube, and in a blog entirely in Hungarian via the Normal Stash blog.
All right, that sounds great. Tangram Project here with Pandora Connection. And interesting you say it comes off the album Highway and you're calling from the car. Very interesting. Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks.
That is Tangram with Pandora Connection. We'll have that up for download for you at stash.normal.org after 3 p.m. Pacific. Great music. Thanks, Sarah Kott, for that for our Electric Tuesday. Loving the Daily Toker Tunes.
On the road again. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Friends, it's time we legalize the responsible use of marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. We're destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of good, hardworking Americans every year in this country for no good reason. There's absolutely nothing wrong with smoking pot. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at NORML.org.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527. California has long been the epicenter of marijuana law reform in the United States. Every Tuesday, we're joined by Eric Brenner, the producer of the California Marijuana Report, for an interview with an important figure in cannabis in the Golden State. You can hear the entire California Marijuana Report online at California Normal's site, canormal.org, and Beverly Hills Normal at normal90210.org. Now, here with another great interview is Eric Brenner.
Hi, this is Chief Mayor, and you listen to Eric Brenner on the California Marijuana Report.
The most important weapon we have in fighting the war on drugs is information and publicity. Please call San Diego District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis at area code 619-531-4311 or area code 619-843-7977. Demand that all charges against Donna Lambert be dropped immediately. Let's end this war on marijuana and free all the California marijuana prisoners.
Some people think they jive me, but I know they must be crazy. Don't see their misfortune, else they're just too lazy. Je suis le grand zombie, my yellow belt of Charizard. Ain't afraid of no tomcat, fill my brains with poison. Walk through the fire, fly through the smoke. See my enemy at the end of the road. Walk on pins and needles, see what they can do. Walk on gilded splinters with the cane of the Zulu.
And joining us this week on the California Marijuana Report is Starchild. Starchild is a candidate for supervisor in District 8, San Francisco's District 8, which includes the Castro, Noe Valley, and Glen Park neighborhoods. Starchild, welcome to the California Marijuana Report. Tell me, what exactly is your position on marijuana legalization?
Marijuana decriminalization is what I prefer because I just want them to stop enforcing the laws, you know, jailing and otherwise penalizing people for using, growing, or selling marijuana. I don't want there to be a huge tax and regulatory apparatus, which you know, would probably come with legalization. In all likelihood, it may be unavoidable, but if we're talking about what ideally should happen...
There's a lot of talk in San Francisco, particularly from a guy named Ross Mercurimi. He's the supervisor of District 8.
District 5.
District 5 is what I meant to say, I'm sorry, covering the Haight-Ashbury very active in the city's medical marijuana community. What is your position on his insistence that the city regulate so much of the marijuana industry? Additionally, he's even suggested grow marijuana for patients. What is your position on that?
I don't think that's necessary. I think they would just, you know, get out of the way. People would be capable of, you know, growing their own, whether as individuals or cooperatives or this kind of thing. It's really unnecessary. I suppose the thinking is, I mean, I don't think his intentions with that are necessarily bad, although he did propose to limit the number of head shops in the Haight-Ashbury, which I strongly disagree with, you know, and I think any cannabis user should be outraged that Green Party supervisor would be opposed to letting new head shops open in an area that's historically known for that. But in terms of city government growing marijuana, I imagine his thinking was probably that this would give cannabis users a little bit more protection against the federal government, that the feds might be less inclined to come in and bust an operation if it was a city government-run operation. You know, if he wants to provide protection, I think what would be more useful is directing the SFPD to provide better protection to cannabis dispensaries when there's a threat of them being raided, and to, even more importantly, just stop cooperating with the DEA when the DEA comes to town. Ago, I remember actually having a conversation with the Captain Tim Hetrick of the SFPD, and he told me that he'd been driving around a DEA guy who was in town, and I asked him why he was doing this, and he said because the DEA guy wasn't from here and didn't know the area. So, you know, there's no reason why local law enforcement should be providing that kind of assistance to federal officers who are coming here with the intent of violating or undermining California law.
The Vice Squad inside the San Francisco Police Department, what would Starchild, as a supervisor for District 8 representing the Castro, Noe Valley, DuBose Triangle, what would you do when funding came up? What would you do?
The Vice Squad. I would like to see those officers focused on preventing and responding to real crime, like rapes, murders, and robberies, and you know, stop going after drug users and prostitutes and this kind of thing, which is what Vice does. I mean, the very word Vice, it's like another word for sin. It's a religion-based concept. And if you would disagree, the things that you know, Vice refers to are even vices. Think smoking marijuana is a vice.
These are very controversial positions to take, unfortunately. I mean, outside of our circles. What are you doing to get this message out?
Well, you know, I'm taking advantage of whatever opportunities I can find to speak and talk to media and people like yourself. You know, not having a campaign staff or a bunch of volunteers is somewhat limited, and I don't necessarily want to spend all my time going door-to-door out talking to people, because I'll get burned out pretty quick if I do that. But I'm interested in hearing people's suggestions for ideas that they think I could do to promote these ideas, and if they're willing to step up to the plate and help, that's even better.
Starchild, let's talk about Tax Cannabis 2010. This is officially on the ballot for the November election. We had way more signatures than needed. There were, I guess, 400,000 needed. We came in little over 700,000. What is your prediction? Will we see legal marijuana here in 2010?
I think so. I think it's going to pass. I don't know for a fact, obviously. I don't really have any particular evidence to point to about that, just a general impression from listening and watching the news and where I think the public's kind of at with it right now. I think that with this economy and so forth, people are going to be much more receptive.
Starchild, thank you so much for joining us today on the California Marijuana Report.
Oh, no problem.
But I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
All right, folks, time to check our cannabis community calendar, which you can find at norml.org/calendar. Today, Tuesday, April 6th, the Metro Region Adopt a Highway is still taking place in Wayne, Oakland, Macomb, and St. Clair counties in Michigan. This is where the normal chapters volunteer to help keep the nation's highways clean, get a nice little sign by the side of the road, and it's a great way to get some civic involvement and get your name known outside of the marijuana community. So for more information on that, check out minormal.com. Tennessee Normal had a press conference for the Safe Access to Medical Cannabis Act. We're happy to announce that Tennessee Normal are working hard to get medical marijuana passed in Tennessee. For information, check out tnnormal.org. The Northern Michigan Compassion Club is meeting at the Sheboygan Library in Sheboygan, Michigan. Check out information at minormal.org. The Greater Torch Lake Area Compassion Club is meeting in Alden, Michigan. Again, minormal.org. In Missouri, Joplin Normal is having their monthly meeting at the Blackthorn Pizza and Pub. Check out joplin-normal.org for details on that. And Hemp TV is in Albuquerque, New Mexico. You can check them out by calling 505-880-0666 for more information. Also, New Mexico Normal will let you know about that at nmnormal.org. Wednesday, April 17th, we've got a monthly online meeting via Pal Talk for Ohio Normal, so all across the state of Ohio, people can get involved in that conference call. CSU Fresno Normal is having a meeting. This is the California State University Fresno chapter at the Family Food and Science Building on the CSU Fresno campus. Thursday, April 8th, University of New Hampshire Normal is having their meeting. Central Ohio Normal is also having a meeting via Pal Talk. And Pittsburgh Normal is having their monthly open meeting. This will be taking place at the Shadow Lounge facility on 5972 Baum Boulevard in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Check out pittsburghnormal.org for details. And as we approach the weekend, Friday, April 9th, Denver, a 420 rally fundraiser taking place at Castleman's Bar and Venue, 26th and Walnut in Denver. 10% of all proceeds go to Mile High Normal in Denver. Check out milehighnormal.org for details. And on the weekend, Saturday, April 10th, Tuscola County Normal's Adopt a Highway pickup is happening. Check out minormal.org for details. The Northern Michigan Compassion Club is meeting at the Horizon Bookstore in Petoskey, Michigan. Again, minormal.org. Oregon Normal is having their twice-monthly cardholder meeting at the Village Ballroom. We will be streaming it live with Normal Show Live. This will be at noon on Saturday, April 10th, noon Pacific time. The largest Normal chapter meeting on the planet will be taking place. We'll be streaming it live here at Normal Show Live. Central Ohio Normal is having an April 10th, 2010 meetup at the Panera Bread. The Fox Valley THC Tour is taking place in Appleton, Wisconsin, and a cannabis salve and cooking class sponsored by Oregon Normal at the Village Ballroom after the cardholders meeting. This is where you can learn about how to make food and healing salve. Very interesting class to take there. For more information on all of these events, including phone numbers, websites, emails, and other links, check out the Normal Cannabis Community Calendar at norml.org/calendar.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
'Cause the day was hard and your work was long, and you need a break from all that's wrong. You better look at the clock, 'cause it's 4:19. Time to reach in that pocket for your bag of green and smoke that weed. Smoke that weed. Smoke that weed.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 44 after the hour. We are going to continue a rant that I started on yesterday's show and ran late. This was a document that was produced by the Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA, creating make-work law enforcement jobs since 1970. The DEA came out with this top 10 reasons why we should not... top 10 reasons not to legalize drugs, right? This is in response to the 2010 campaign in California for the legalization of marijuana. It's also taking place in Oregon and Washington, and they're scared because, well, people are starting to support this, and so I found it was my duty to debunk these top 10 reasons not to legalize drugs. We took care of numbers 10 through 6 on yesterday's show. You can get a download of that show or play it on demand from our blog at stash.normal.org. But for now, we're going to go to the top five reasons not to legalize drugs. Let's get it started with number five.
Legalization of drugs will lead to increased use and increased levels of addiction. Legalization has been tried before and failed miserably. Legalization has been tried before. Alaska's experiment with legalization in the 1970s led to the state's teens using marijuana at more than twice the rate of other youths nationally. This led Alaska's residents to vote to recriminalize marijuana in 1990.
Lies, yeah!
Yeah, definitely a lie. We had Alan St. Pierre on the show yesterday to explain exactly why that was a lie. First of all, Alaska never actually legalized marijuana. They decriminalized it, and it came through a Supreme Court decision called Raven that basically said that under the Alaska Constitution, people have enough of a privacy right so that if they're using up to 1 ounce of cannabis in their own home, that's no reason for the police to be bothering them. There was a 1990 vote to criminalize marijuana that did pass by a narrow majority, but again, that was struck down by the courts because that would be changing the Constitution by a vote, and the Alaskan Supreme Court said that was not something that they could do. But once again, it's very interesting how they said the Alaskan legalizing marijuana caused, you know, much more addiction when they cited the 1992 Institute of Medicine report that said marijuana use doesn't cause any sort of gateway effect. And as we've looked at the experience of the states that have legalized marijuana in some way, 13 states up to this date have decriminalized marijuana and 14 states that have legalized the medical use of marijuana, and we find that the DEA's theory is blown to bits. In fact, that 1999 IOM report that the DEA cited concluded, quote, "In sum, there is little evidence that decriminalization of marijuana use necessarily leads to a substantial increase in marijuana use," end quote. That was cited by the DEA to back up one of their positions, so if they want to take part of it, they got to take all of it. The Institute of Medicine report says decriminalization does not lead to a substantial increase in marijuana use. All right, let's move on to number four on the top five.
Crime, violence, and drug use go hand in hand. Six times as many homicides are committed by people under the influence of drugs as by those who are looking for money to buy drugs. Most drug crimes aren't committed by people trying to pay for drugs. They're committed by people on drugs.
Drugs, 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 drugs. So, what does this have to do with cannabis? I mean, first of all, the notion that a cannabis user deprived of weed is jonesing so bad he's got to commit a crime to get the money for weed is ridiculous. And then the idea that some cannabis users would be driven to crime by the effects of cannabis is just plain ludicrous. I could cite to you a whole bunch of studies that look at violence and marijuana and find that cannabis use tends to inhibit violence by its users. But you don't need to take my word for it. Go find some marijuana smokers, and you'll find out they're not very violent people. Now, the only violence that is attributable to marijuana is directly caused by its prohibition. Mexican drug syndicates are not murdering 18,000 people over a three-year span to protect their breweries, vineyards, beer and wine trucks, and hops and tobacco crops. The only crime commonly attributed to marijuana use is the plundering of munchies from the fridge. All right, number three on the DEA's top five reasons not to legalize drugs.
Alcohol has caused significant health, social, and crime problems in this country, and legalized drugs would only make the situation worse. The legalization lobby claims drugs are no more dangerous than alcohol, but drunk driving is one of the primary killers of Americans. Do we want our bus drivers, nurses, and airline pilots to be able to take drugs one evening and operate freely at work the next day? Do we want to add to the destruction by making drugged driving another primary killer?
No. This guy here in the legalization lobby actually claims that cannabis is far safer than alcohol. Now, I've got that chart of the therapeutic indexes of drugs. Let me put that back on the board again. This is a ratio of the effective dose to the lethal dose. That is, if you drink X, well, if you drink 10X, you're going to die, right? If X gets you a buzz, you drink 10X, you're going to die. And in this ratio, we can see cannabis's ratio. We can get through some of the drugs here. Codeine's like a 1 to 20. Special K is a 1 to 38. Nitrous oxide's a 1 to 150. The ratio for cannabis is 1 to 20,000 to 1 to 40,000. That means however much you smoke that gets you high, you have to smoke 20,000 times that much in order to die from it. So almost every drug, and definitely cannabis, which I don't even consider a drug, I consider it a healing herb, are far safer than alcohol are. So that's the first thing I just want to get out of the way on that one. But the other one here is where they say that there's this, they've got this talking point here, and it pivots again from a fact to a falsehood, right? They talk about alcohol causing significant health, social crime problems, drunk driving, etc. Yes, that is a serious problem. But then they pivot that to the falsehood, which is this implied threat that somehow legalizing cannabis would lead to more highway fatalities. First of all, we can go straight to the United States Department of Transportation fact sheet on cannabis, which states, quote, effects from smoking cannabis products are felt within minutes and reach their peak in 10 to 30 minutes. Typical marijuana smokers experience a high that lasts approximately 2 hours, end quote. So, if the bus driver, the nurse, or the airline pilot want to smoke a joint before bed and then drive, nurse, or fly me the next day, I'm not at all worried. No more so than I would be if they decided to have a glass of wine the night before work. And then the other thing we have to remember is that if cannabis smokers are driving, then they're driving now, right? Pot smoking is already happening. It's not like legalization suddenly means people are smoking pot and driving. If people are smoking pot and driving, which I do not recommend, if they're doing it, they're doing it now. So if there's such a threat on our highways, you'd think we'd seen the bodies by now. Numerous studies conducted all over the world have confirmed what we already know. Drivers under the influence of cannabis tend to follow less closely to the vehicle in front of them. Drivers tend to decrease speed following cannabis inhalation. Drivers with blood alcohol levels of 0.05 were three times as likely to have engaged in unsafe driving activities prior to a fatal crash as compared to individuals who tested positive for marijuana. That's 0.05. Remember, that's below the per se limit of impairment, right? And drivers with low levels of alcohol present in their blood below 0.05 experienced a greater elevated risk as compared to drivers who tested positive for high concentrations of cannabis above 5 nanograms per milliliter in the blood. What we're, let me decode all of the geek speak there. What they're saying is someone who would be considered a legal driver below the 0.08 alcohol limit is a bigger risk than the highest stoner on the road. That's what they're saying right there. So, let's not encourage people to smoke and drive. I'm not saying that. But let's be honest about what the relative risks are involved here. Until I can drive around and see bars that no longer have parking lots and alcohol no longer served at sports stadiums, I refuse to believe that the cannabis-using drivers are more of a threat than the legal alcohol-using drivers. All right, let's move on to the number two point of the top 5 points, the DEA's top 10 reasons not to legalize drugs.
Europe's more liberal drug policies are not the right model for America. The legalization lobby claims that the European model of drug problem is successful. However, since legalization of marijuana in Holland, heroin addiction levels have tripled, and Needle Park seems like a poor model for America.
Yeah, I'm not sure about it. The legalization lobby claims the European model of the drug problem is successful. The European model of the drug problem. Okay, maybe someone was high when they wrote the sentence. Let's take a look at the European model they're talking about here. They talk about Holland, right, and heroin and all of this. First of all, the Dutch began their policy of cannabis tolerance in 1976. Okay, so since 1976, they've experienced a world where adults are treated like adults if they want to go into a coffee shop and smoke a joint. According to the 2008 EMCDDA National Report for the Netherlands, now the EMCDDA, that's basically the European version of our, you know, departments of health or the ONDCP, you know, the drug control policies. According to their 2008 National Report for the Netherlands, lifetime prevalence of heroin use was 0.3%, in 1997, and 0.2% in 2001. So, wait a minute. Heroin use went down by a third from 1997 to 2001. So I looked all over the DEA's website back in 2001 to see if they'd had a press release that said, hey, look, they legalized cannabis and heroin use went down. I didn't find one. I didn't think I would. But they didn't claim anything when heroin use went down. Now, to be honest, from 2001... from 2001 when it was 0.2% to 2005 is now 0.6%. That is a tripling in heroin use between 2001 to 2005. However, that's not looking back all the way through back to 1976 here to see what heroin use rates have been. And basically, heroin use rates rise and fall on a whole bunch of other factors that have nothing to do with cannabis coffee shops in Holland or Amsterdam, you know, anywhere in the country. So, it's kind of an unfair way to look at the data. It's kind of like saying, looking at the stock price of Enron, you know, in 2005 and saying, oh, look how great it is, but, you know, the next couple of years it wasn't so great. They're picking and choosing the data here, folks. They got to look all the way across a longer period here. But once again, here, we're not talking about heroin as far as what we want to legalize in America. We want to talk about legalization of marijuana. So, again, they cited that 1999 Institute of Medicine report that says there is no gateway, that smoking pot doesn't lead to heroin addiction. So I don't know what their point is, but I'll make a point to compare the European model versus the American model. I mentioned how the heroin use rates in Holland are 0.6%. In America, they're 1.52%. All right, time for the big one here on the DEA's top 10 reasons not to legalize drugs. Number one.
Most nonviolent drug users get treatment, not jail time. The legalization lobby claims America's prisons are filling up with users. Truth is, only about 5% of inmates in federal prison are there because of simple possession. Most drug criminals are in jail, even on possession charges, because they have plea bargained down from major trafficking offenses or more violent drug crimes.
Oh, only one out of 20 of the 2.3 million people we imprison, the world's highest imprisonment rate, both per capita and in raw numbers, only one out of 20 of them are there for simple possession. Well, let's see. One out of 20, 5% times 2.3, carry the 2. Yeah, that's 115,000 Americans in a cage for their personal use of drugs. 115,000. Now, the Sentencing Project, another nonprofit organization, determined that 11,200 of those Americans are in a cage for simple marijuana possession alone. Now, of course, this is just federal prison we're talking about, when most marijuana users are processed through city and county jails and housed in county jails or state prisons. So it's going to be a little more than 11,000. Now, another bit of falsehood that they pivot to from these imprisonment facts is this idea that most drug criminals are plea bargaining down from more serious charges. Often those most serious charges they're plea bargaining down from are intent to distribute, which can happen when a cannabis user makes the mistake of keeping separate strains in separate baggies. Anytime you keep your weed in separate baggies, you can be charged with this intent to distribute, because you keep it in separate bags, you must want to sell it. That must be the deal, right? You couldn't be wanting to keep strains separate or anything. You couldn't be wanting to portion out how much you're going to use over the week, could you? No, you must be selling. Another thing that people will plea bargain down from, conspiracy charges. Conspiracy charges when, like, you, two and three friends, maybe you put your money in together to buy a little bit more so you get the break on the ounce, right? Well, that's conspiracy, see? That's a big old charge you can plea bargain down from. And, manufacturer charges, yeah. Like, you could be a deadly drug manufacturer if you're growing a pot plant in your closet. So those are some of those more serious charges that people are plea bargaining down from in order to get in jail for just simple possession. But let me take this a little bit further, because that, even taking that, assumes that somehow the jail is the only bad thing that happens, right? Well, the rest of them are just getting drug treatment, right? They're getting drug treatment, not jail. Well, even if they're getting drug treatment, they're still getting sentenced for something. They're getting a misdemeanor or a felony, and they're getting sentenced for something, and that's giving them a criminal record. The harms to the user are irrespective of any stay in a jail cell. Here's a list of some of the things that can happen to you if you have a marijuana conviction on your record. If you're convicted and enter a plea, you'll be on probation, and you may have mandatory urinalysis tests to take. A conviction could impact child custody issues in family court. An arrest for possession with intent to distribute, or an arrest for the manufacture of five or more plants, may result in the state attempting to forfeit your home, your car, your cash, and other assets, which they can do even if the charges are later dismissed or you are acquitted, found not guilty at trial, because of the heinous law known as asset forfeiture. That's right, you could lose your home, your car, your cash, and other assets, even if you're found not guilty. Even if you're never charged with a crime, they can take your stuff because you're using or growing a plant. A conviction can impact federally insured student loans. You could be out of the university. A felony conviction deprives you of the right to vote. And in fact, when we look at disenfranchised African Americans in this country, more African Americans are disenfranchised per capita because of our drug laws today than were disenfranchised during the Jim Crow era by Jim Crow laws. That's something to check out. A felony conviction deprives you of the right to possess firearms. We've talked about this. We'll talk about it more. Oregon, Washington, California, legal medical marijuana patients getting their Second Amendment firearm rights taken from them because they want to choose the safest possible medicine. A conviction can get you tossed out of government-subsidized housing. A conviction can impair your ability to obtain food stamps and other welfare benefits. Hooray! Poor people kicked out of government housing, on food stamps, getting welfare, and homeless. That's just what we want if they happen to smoke a joint. That's what we need, more homeless people. Your ability to ever adopt children will be jeopardized. Because, you know, we want kids to go to good homes and everything, but if someone smoked a joint, you know, we can't put them in a home with someone who smoked a joint. I mean, they're going to just have to stay in the orphanage. You will be denied entry into Canada and possibly other countries. A misdemeanor conviction remains on your record and available to the public for 3 years before it can be expunged. And it's different in other states as well. It varies by state, which may have an impact on current or future employment. Do you think maybe when you're trying to get a job, people might Google you, maybe look up your criminal records? Ooh, drug conviction, drug convict, can't hire him. A felony conviction remains on your record and available to the public for 5 years before it can be expunged, which may have an impact on current or future employment. Again, that's different in different states as well. The DEA is terrified because there's a legitimate shot for the voters to legalize marijuana use, manufacture, and sales in one, possibly two, maybe even three West Coast states this year. So if this top 10 list, if this is the best the DEA can do, I really like our chances. Oh boy, we went late today, Ganja John.
Yes, we did. I was going to say something, but, you know, it's okay.
Okay, it's no, okay. Say it.
Yeah, I think the chatters like it, and I think our listeners like it, so here you go.
So it's good. All right. Yeah. Well, for Ganja John and Cannabis Carry, for everyone here at normal.org, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Mitch and Cannabis Science. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers. I also want to get in real quick here to check out Rob Corey versus the Attorney General of Colorado in a debate tomorrow noon at the Denver University DJ Strum College of Law. Go, Rob!
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
Hey there, chatters. A little bit of after the show for you here because I got to give a better shout out than that one for Rob Corey. So a little after the show. Rob Corey is debating John Southers, the Attorney General of the state of Colorado, at a debate tomorrow noon at the the Denver University Strum College of Law. So Denver University tomorrow at noon. I'm going to try to get a hold of John Doe from John Doe Radio to see if he can get some audio from that event. Rob Corey is a fantastic speaker, member of the Normal Legal Committee, and has won numerous cases for medical marijuana patients in the Denver and Boulder areas, getting the cops to return them pounds of medicine. So it should be an exciting debate. Rob Corey versus John Southers, Colorado Attorney General, Denver University, Strum College of Law, tomorrow noon.